Hello, Joan. I was just saying, and I feel like I know you forever because I've been following your books and online Pleasant Hill Farm. I've just had my heart involved with what you're doing. I'm just fascinated to meet you and talk to you about your new book, Wedded to the Land.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be here and talking to me.
Yeah. If you could describe a day at Pleasant Hill Farm, from getting up in the morning, what do you see? What do you feel?
Well, it depends upon the time of the year. If you're discussing this time of the year, it's a lot more relaxed, even though we're still doing many different jobs that need to be done before the winter hits. If you're talking August, it would be very overwhelming because you know by the time you are hitting the floor that you're going to be packing blueberries or managing yew pickers or some way involved in the harvest. So because it is farm life, I don't have the same thing going on every single day other than the simple chores, milking goats, feeding my chickens, those kinds of things that are going to have to be done no matter what. So it's a very seasonal life, which may seem foreign to those who do the same job every day. And the good thing about it is by the time you can't take one more day of maybe packing blueberries, it's almost over.
Yeah. So blueberries is the main part of your farm, and the rest is to be self-sustaining, or.
That's correct. I mean, we make our living growing organic blueberries, but we also raise now organic strawberries and peaches, a few apples, pears. So there are other fruits, partly because of the demand is so high. And then there are intense moments like we do maple sugaring. That's like the first cash crop in the spring.
Okay.
And but then right now we just finished hauling firewood for the evaporator for maple sugaring. So it's like the house that Jack built. There's always something that has to be done in order to
Oh,
support the
yeah.
whole system, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And you live off the grid. Can you explain what that means and how you do it? What are the big challenges of living off the grid?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges is realizing that you have very limited electricity. So we taught our children and ourselves, I mean, never to leave a light on, which was not hard to do. I mean, but sometimes we find when we have guests, like you leave the water running. Well, because we used to have to pump all our own water by hand, we
Wow.
learned not to do that. So by living very intentionally, you just grasp the notion that there's a limited resource. Let's be very careful with it. And you're also more cognizant of the fact that there's not as many daylight hours, not right now. So we don't have as much electricity being made, except like yesterday when the wind was whipping around on our wind generator. We were making lots of electricity for a cloudy day. So I just think you live, when you live more intentionally, you have to be thinking about many more details than just flipping a switch.
And why is it important to you? Why do you do this? I imagine to a lot of people, living off the grid seems like an awful lot of effort when it would be so much easier to just flip a switch. Why do you do this?
Well, partly at the very beginning, we would have had to pay as much money to bring consumers' powers to our house as to buy our wind generator. And we said, well, this doesn't make sense. Why would we pay money to bring in lines and then pay more money out? And then once we started down that path, not just from an economic standpoint, we began to realize, well, it's also sort of silly not to harvest what's out there. There is so much solar power, and of course, we're in a prime location for wind because I'm so close to Lake Michigan, that between the two of them, we can create enough power to run our household. My husband has power tools, he has a sawmill. There are various things that we can run. So we just began to realize that there's a huge potential, so why not utilize it? It's right there for us.
Yeah, okay. You talked about wood burning, and that caught my interest because I am one of those, I believe you said 26, 27% of the population, somewhere around there, heats by wood. I'm one of those. What can you say about polluting the air, because that's important to me. I want to be self-sufficient. I'm not off the grid as much as you are, but the environment's important to me. So, what have you learned about wood burning? Because you do that too, right?
I have a wood cook stove that I use some of the time, and I used to use only wood for cooking until just recently. I think there's two responsibilities. If you are going to heat with wood, then obviously you want the most efficient stove that you can possibly own. We actually have a wood boiler now for our house, not the outdoor kind because they're not very efficient. We have an indoor kind so that we're heating water to go through the plex tubing in our floors for radiant heat.
Okay.
And it's extremely efficient. And that's why we chose to do that instead of like an outside boiler because those are known to be, they create quite a bit of pollution. And so I also think that along with using the most efficient method that you can, you have a responsibility to plant trees. And John and I have planted hundreds and hundreds of trees. Because if I'm going to use this resource, then I want to replenish this.
Yes, I'll do my best.
Most of the time, though, actually, we just use dead wood, like the big storm, you know, and knock down more trees. Now, and that's usually sufficient for our needs.
And the organic blueberries, like you said, that's the main thing that you do out there. Why should people buy organic blueberries rather than the traditional, conventional? Maybe traditional is the wrong word for that, that are sprayed. Why is that important? You know, what do you tell your customers?
I always tell people that organic farming is not about what we don't do. It's about what we do. That it's a whole worldview of wanting to cultivate very healthy soil so you have healthy plants, you'll have a healthier environment, you'll have a healthier product. And this is not to really criticize conventional farmers, that's the typical term, because I have good friends who are conventional farmers, and they're very good farmers too.
That's true.
But we just think that extra step is just going to take even better care of everything that's growing in that soil, and not just the plants. I'm talking about all the micronutrients and the things that happen below the surface of the ground. And I think people are beginning to realize that more and more. And so to me, it's that whole worldview that you're sort of adopting when you become an organic farmer, that you're going to think about every bit of the resources that are out there and how am I going to use them in the best way. And then I also like the thought that I am creating a very healthy product because a lot of my customers have all kinds of allergies and they can eat my food. So, you know, a long time ago, we used to ship blueberries to a customer out in South Dakota because there were only four things she could eat. And one of them was organic blueberries.
Wow.
So there's a whole host of reasons why, to me, it's a very important role that we play in the food chain.
Yeah. The whole idea of organic farming versus conventional farming, we've almost lost the family farm, which I think is
where
really
we are losing
painful.
Them right now.
There is a movement now, local food movement, with a few farmers coming in, but it's certainly a tough life. Your book presents farming, I think, very accurately as far as my limited knowledge knows, that there's a romance to it. There's a beauty to it, and you certainly bring that out in your book. But there's also a lot of tough work.
That's right.
A lot of blood, sweat, and tears that go into this. Risks. Your husband almost lost his finger. You know, there are dangerous parts to it too, and it never stops.
It never stops.
Yeah, you can't take a vacation off of this. So, tell us some of your thoughts about: is it important? How important is it to bring the family farm back? And if it is, how do we do that?
That's an extremely important question. And I don't really know if I have the answer. I think farm life must be portrayed realistically, but with hope. I mean, that was my goal. Because farm life is intense. You get over one challenge, and, you know, like last year we had the extreme frost, and everybody lost everything.
Yeah.
And then this year, everybody thought we were going to have great blueberry crop, and this new fruit fly came in and started devastating the whole country is what's happening. So it's like, okay, you can make it through this one, and then there's another one. You know, I just have a lot of faith that God's always going to pull me through this. But I think we need to encourage youth in a practical way to really respect not just farming, but maybe traditional skills and manual labor. And I'm also thinking of a friend of ours who's going to be 89. He's one of the few people who knows how to run a crane still, the dragline crane. And he's out digging in our farm sometimes for, you know, helping us with ponds. And my husband was saying, well, you know, we don't want to lose Rich because he's our friend. But when he's gone, there's nobody around who can do what he can do. So we need to encourage young people to think, that there's just as much to be respected in doing these types of jobs and working with your hands. And telling them that a college education is wonderful. I'm extremely thankful for both, you know, my undergraduate and my graduate degrees. But I'm still out there weeding plants and, you know, picking blueberries and peaches. Yes. Well, not so much humble. It just keeps you rooted.
Yes.
You know, my
yes.
education yes. helps me think, and that I yes. appreciate. And so I think people, young people need to realize it's not going to be an easy life, but it's going to be an extremely rewarding life. And we have one couple, we've had apprentices for years, we're sort of getting out of it now, and they run a very successful CSA over in Wisconsin. And it's wonderful to realize, you know, their beginnings in agriculture on our farm. So I, you know, we still try to always encourage the young people we meet, consider it. Just remember, it will not be an easy life. There's going to be some very bad years, so save up.
Yeah.
You know, be prepared for the year when nothing is there because you got frosted out.
What strikes me as very different with farming is that our knowledge today, and certainly the kind of knowledge that we get in the classroom, can be very specialized.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas living on a farm, you learn how to do a little
everything
of everything
yes.
and a lot of some things.
Yes.
So it's a way of taking care of yourself, whereas you can have that PhD and be thrown out in the woods and be dead in a day.
Well, but they would know what they're doing in another place that I would have no idea what
That's
I'm doing.
True.
You know.
That's
yeah.
true. Yeah. A lot of your book also has this parallel of spirituality at, along with farming. And I can understand that, too. I live on a farm, too. And to me, it's one of the most sacred places I've been. Talk to us about that spiritual aspect of how you farm, that your relationship to the land with the spirituality.
Well, I consider myself a woman of faith. Mm-hmm. And so, as I said, you know, we think, we always trust that God is going to get us through whatever comes our way. But there's just that deep sense of respect that this is his creation, and I want to be part of caring for it, making it a very beautiful place, like by planting the wildflowers, that I want to be part of sort of what I call recreation in that sense, in whatever little way I can. So to me, it's mostly a deep respect for the land and realizing, you know, I'm living not off the land in the sense of survival, but it's that piece of dirt that's giving me my income. So you don't want to mistreat it. And that's why, I mean, I call it wedded to the land, because it's that sense of commitment. Farming is not a career. Farming is a real commitment, just like getting married.
Yeah.
You are marrying a whole way of life, and you are marrying the land.
Yeah.
So I guess in that sense, it's that spiritual commitment.
Yeah. These days, we talk about climate change a lot, and I think probably no one out there is more aware than the farmer about how weather interacts with everyday life.
Definitely.
How do you deal with the changes in climate?
Well, there's not a whole lot I can do about changes in climate. I'm at the mercy of the weather each and every day. I keep a weather journal, so I know what the weather is for like the last 15 years. I've always been very much in love with meteorology. So every day I note down what's going on, and I have found that there are some similar patterns in the weather. And definitely we are seeing a change as far as our growing season. Now, there are always years where it's not completely the same, but we can expect now to make maple syrup sooner in February. You know, the sap runs closer to the middle of February, to the early in February, and that wasn't the way it was years ago. So, and the same thing, we just see ripening times are different, and yet then you get a strange year where everything changes again. You go, like, what is going on?
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely believe in climate change, and I think that we're all going to just have to realize that we are going to be able to grow sweet potatoes in the north more readily than we could. So it's like,
yeah,
we just have to sort of accept what we can't change ourselves. And when it comes to the weather, that's the first thing we look at every day, because that's going to determine what I do today.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you're a fruit farmer.
Correct.
And that, in some ways, can be even more challenging than
it is
general farming. What are those challenges?
Well, you're working with a permaculture, whereas, you know, a soybean farmer, commodity farmer, they're planting their crop, they're reaping it usually in the fall, and they're bringing in a certain amount of income. And they have their whole sets of challenges, too. But when you're planting, like, a peach orchard, you know you won't reap any fruit off of that for several years. There's a more work, usually in the sense that my corn farmer friends, they harvest their crop now and then maybe they service some equipment, but they usually have the winter off. We're just starting pruning blueberries. My husband finally went out today to start on that. And that's, I call it a marathon, because we'll start now and we'll finish up in May. So we'll prune all winter unless there's snow covering the crown of the bush. And the same thing, our, you know, apple farmers are pruning their apples, peaches, pears. We work year round. And that's a difference compared to the commodity farmer in the long run. And then also it's a very small niche. I mean, less than 1% of the nation farms now. And out of that 1%, an extremely small percentage is growing fruit, because it just is that much more work is what it boils down to.
Is it higher in Michigan? It is, isn't
it?
Oh,
of course.
Yes. Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
Especially in this section of Michigan.
Yeah.
Michigan has still, I think, some of the biggest blueberry farms in the country.
Yeah. Along with growing food, you grew sons on the farm.
Yes.
There was a section of the book that was about adopting Matthew and Carlos.
Correct.
On a Colombian orphanage.
Right.
Can you give us a little peek on that story?
Well, we decided to adopt our children, and we decided that we might as well get two at once, if, you know, if that's what God wanted us to have. So we were offered these two youngsters that had been abandoned. And I think partly when you're young and naive and you haven't a clue what you're doing, we never thought, we're like basically bringing home twins is what we were doing, mm-hmm. except there were twins that were running around at that stage too, because they were 20 months and 4 years old. And, it was a challenge in its own way, too. But a farm is a great place for children to grow up, especially for boys. So it was one of those huge blessings to bring them home and to experience the joy of seeing young people grow into little farmers, in the sense that they were beekeepers and very active in that for a long time.
So what happens to Matthew and Carlos? We got to a certain point in the book, and then one of your sons decided to run away.
Yeah, he did.
And the other ones stayed. So children can be very different in how they respond too. So what happened next? I guess I'm trying to peek past the book.
Okay. Well, Matthew is in the military. And Matthew was abandoned when he was older, he's always had some major problems. And
that's
still
really hard.
It is very hard. You know? Yeah. And he still has those problems. He's still struggling with them. And, you know, we are there for him the best we can be, is our attitude, that, you know, the door is there. You can always walk in. And Carlos is a completely different story, because he was abandoned when he was only 7 months. And so
no memory of it.
There's no memory. You know, we're very honest and transparent with our kids. And his attitude is, you're mom and dad. And that's great. You know, that's where we want to be, basically. And he lives in northern Indiana because he went to college down in Fort Wayne. So he has a very good job. We don't see him as much as we would like to see him. But
yeah. Do you think either one of them will circle back to farming in their own lives, or hard to tell?
It's hard to tell. Plus, our attitude is you must use the gifts and talents that you have. And that's more important to me. I see
good
Carlos. I try. As I always said, I'm trying my best. I see Carlos maybe more going back into beekeeping at some point.
Mm.
It might be more like an avocation.
Mm-hmm.
But he misses his bees. He talks about his bees. And even now and then, I go, maybe I should just get one hive. You should get one hive, you know?
Yeah.
So I know that he dearly loves the farm. It's very important to him. He does have some thoughts that he shares now and then. But it's like, it's his life. He must do what he must do. And that's what I want him to do.
Are you planning any readings, any events coming up in the Kalamazoo area with this book?
Well, I just talked to Gloria at Kazoo Books, and she invited me to come on December 14th for the Author Day.
Oh, good.
And then I have quite a few things starting more in the spring. I'm be in South Haven at the Scott Club in early March. I'm speaking at the Saugatuck Historical Society. I think that's early July. And the Saugatuck Women's Lit Club in late June, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
And any projects you're working on now? This is not your first book, so sure it's not the last.
Well, I have a manuscript waiting. It's with an editor right now, and I'm hoping that one, it's like a farming novel for children, basically, because it takes place on a Michigan fruit farm. So that's like my companion book for children to see what goes on in farming. So I'm hoping she'll say yes. I have another sequel to Vining's Mountain that I'm almost done with. And then I'm researching some other projects, one including another narrative nonfiction that would look at the whole fruit industry in the history of Michigan.
Ah.
Because we had a stellar like gold mine in peaches in the 1870s. And few people seem to realize that we made incredible amounts of money as a state and as farmers from growing fruit, especially peaches.
Yeah.
So I've been, I write about that a little bit in this book, but I'm doing more research to go into greater depth on that topic and then sort of twine it in with my own pioneers into organic fruit farming, because we were one of the first organic fruit farms in this state and one of the oldest now still as an organic fruit farm.
Well, thank you so much, Joan, for opening that window onto Pleasant Hill Farm in your book,
you.
Wedded to the Land. It's a real treat, whether you're living in suburbia or the city or on a piece of land of your own. It's a wonderful book. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Well, thank you for asking me. Now you need to come to the farm.
Absolutely. Love to.